Okay, good evening, everybody. We're continuing in our series of Hilchos Shabbos. I hope everyone took full advantage of Rabbi Twersky's Dibrei Hasorus. They were very inspiring. If you did not, it will be online. I encourage you to take full advantage, even though it's not the same. In a Doma Shmila Re'iyah, but still it's something. Tonight we're going to talk about a very important concept, and that is talk about the Malachos of Shabbos, as we've been discussing the last couple of weeks. We have to discuss a more of a background question, that is, is there a possibility of violating a malacha? If anyone's here from Maariv, Maariv will be next door at 9:30. Just, you shouldn't feel bad walking out. If that's what you're here for, it's okay. So let's discuss whether or not there's such a concept as violating a malacha b'sheva al tasa. Do you always have to actively be involved in something in order to violate a malacha and be chayiv misa on Shabbos for violating that malacha? So this is a very important discussion. It's one that my father speaks about in one of his svarim, and he proves from a Rashi in Sanhedrin. Rashi writes in Sanhedrin, on Daf Samach Vavam and Aleph, Rashi writes very explicitly on his commentary on the Mishnah there, Rashi comments that one will only be chayiv misa on Shabbos for being mechal Shabbos if you perform a malacha sheyesh bo maisa. Only if you are involved actively in the malacha, only then will you be chayiv misa for performing a malacha on Shabbos. What you see clearly is that Rashi is understanding that there's not a possibility of violating a malacha unless you do it with some sort of activity, with some sort of active part that you are going to take in it. If it's just something that I do passively, and a malacha happens to happen because of my passivity, that is not going to be a reason to be chayiv misa on Shabbos for violating malacha. So look what my father writes as follows. V'yiyav shalom rabbi kavanasu. Rashi over there writes, if you look at number Aleph on the Sorshi, Rashi says in Sanhedrin, you can only violate a malacha when you perform a maisa. Says my father commenting on that Rashi, V'iyav shalom rabbi kavanos. You cannot suggest that what Rashi means is dekemo shalinyan malchus ein chayavim ela in kein aver beisur bekumva asei debayinon dumi delav dechasima. What's the rule? When is a person going to be chayav malchus? It's only if you violate a lav. It's only if you violate a los asei shabbatorah. But it's not if you violate any los asei shabbatorah. It's only if you violate a los asei, which is dumi delav dechasima, which is similar to the violation of muzzling up your animal. How do we learn that? Because we assume that there's a hekesh, that there's a connection between the lav of muzzling up your animal while the animal is doing malacha, while the animal is doing work, and the isur and the mitzvah to administer malchus. So therefore the Gemara says that we make a limud. The only time you could be chayiv malchus is when you actually do a lav, when you transgress a violation, which is dumya de lav de chasima, which is similar to that violation of closing up your animal, which means it has to be a lav sheyesh bo maisa. It has to be something that I'm actively involved in. So my father's saying like this. Maybe you'll say, the same way we find by malchus, the only way you can administer malchus is if somebody violated actively a lav. That's the only time you could give malchus. So too, the only time you could give misa is if you actively violate a malach on Shabbos. That's not the reason. That's not true. Why? Maybe that's the case, that the only time we can administer a capital punishment to someone is if they actually do an active maisa, if they do something which is with their activity. That's not true. Why? If we find by somebody who is a megadev, somebody who is violating the Israel, blasphemy, shachayiv misa, afal pi shalos maisa. What is a person, a megadev? What do they do? They're just saying words. They're being megadev as Hashem. Saying words is not really considered an active maisa. That's not considered really being active in a violation in the Torah. And still we say that if a person is megadev, even though you're not actively involved in the malacha, still we assume that you're going to be chayiv misa. So what you see is, we find one set of rules when it comes to malchus, and we find a different set of rules when it comes to misa in the Torah. Generally, by malchus, we assume the only time you can get malchus is if you're actively involved in a violation in the Los Hashem Torah. When it comes to violating a chayiv misos, we assume you could even be chayiv misa if you violate something passively, without a maisa. For example, megadev, that's not really doing any active maisa with my hands. Still, we consider that to be a chiv misa. And similarly, by avodah zarah, we have a violation of ovid avodah zarah. That doesn't only mean that you're going to be chayiv misa if you serve avodah zarah by bowing down to it, by worshiping it, by sacrificing to it. But even if I say eliata, if I look at an avodah zarah and I say, I proclaim, this is my God, you're also in violation of the isur of avodah zarah, and you're going to be chayiv misa. How can that be? I didn't do anything wrong. I mean, obviously I did something wrong, but I didn't do an activity. So what you see is what my father proves from all of this is, When it comes to chiyuvei misa, a person can even be chayiv misa in the Torah if you didn't actively do something wrong. So then when we come to Hilchos Shabbos, why is it that Rashi says you can only violate the Hilchos Shabbos if you violate a malacha by doing an activity? Why should that be the case? Why should that be the case? Where does that come from? Everyone following? So why is that the case? So what you see from here is that it's a special halacha by Shabbos that malachos can only be considered and categorized as malachos if they are violated with an activity, with a maisa. Otherwise, it's not considered a malacha at all. Now, this is going to be very important, as we'll see in a couple of minutes. In fact, we have a Gemara in Shabbos Daf Kuf Chaf, where the Gemara tells us a very important halacha. The Gemara says, lo sasa kam malacha. We learn from this pasuk that it says, lo sasa means, don't do an asiya. Don't actively be involved in a malacha, says the Gemara. We learn from here, hagrama shari. If a malacha happens as a byproduct of something that I did, that biblically is permissible. I didn't violate anything on Shabbos. Why? Because lo sasa kam malacha means, don't actively be involved. And even if it happens by a byproduct of something else that I did, but it's not that I was directly involved in the malacha itself, that also is not considered a violation of lo sasa kam malacha. For example, says the Gemara, let's say I have, unfortunately, a terrible fire, and it's running through the house, and it's going through the town, and I want to know, obviously we're talking about a case where it's not pikuach nefesh, which nowadays in our times, when we have houses right next to each other, it's always pikuach nefesh. So this really is not the story that the Gemara is describing. The Gemara is describing a case where you have somebody who lives out in the forest. He's the only house there, not in the forest, it's also pretty dangerous. Somebody who lives in a desert, and there's nothing else that can catch fire. What? Okay. So whatever, you figure out the case, but you have somebody where it's not a pikuach nefesh situation, and there's a house that's going up in flames. Obviously, there's a malacha on Shabbos to put out a fire. You're not allowed to put out a fire for no good reason. If this pikuach nefesh, obviously, pikuach nefesh overrides everything. But let's say it's not a pikuach nefesh, so am I allowed to put out the fire? No. But, says the Gemara, what you're allowed to do is you're allowed to take buckets of water, put them on the perimeter of the fire, and then, once the fire reaches the buckets will break and the water will come out, and the fire will immediately be put to rest. The fire will go out. What do you mean? I'm actively involved in putting out the fire. Am I not? Says the Gemara. No, that's permissible on Shabbos because the pasuk says, lo sasa kam malacha. And over here, grama, shari. Over here, I'm not really actively involved in the malacha. I am indirectly involved in the malacha. Yes, the fire will ultimately go out because of something that I did. But at the time that I did it, there was no malacha involved. And therefore, even though it's a byproduct of what I did, we do not consider that a malacha because, again, malacha has to be something that I'm actively involved with at the time that the malacha happens. Now, the question is, my father quotes over there as well, and if you look further in this paragraph, V'chei matzinim b'nimuki yosef l'baba kama. There's a discussion in Baba Kama where the Gemara has a machlokas. What's the halacha? Should we assume Isho mishum chitzo or isho mishum mamono? What's the question? What does that mean? Let's say I light a fire. And I'm lighting a fire on my own property. And now I have acres and acres of land, and after a while, the fire finally spreads to somebody else's property and causes some sort of damage in the next person's property. So what do we assume? Isho mishum chitzo or isho mishum mamono? How do I look at that? When a fire now spreads to somebody else's property and damages that person's property, is it as if it's an extension of my own hand and it's as if I now am actively going and lighting a fire in his property? Is that the way we look at it? Or do we say, no, isho mishum mamono? It's as if an object that belongs to me does some sort of damage. It's not that I was actively involved. So you'll say, what's the difference? Either way, I'm going to have to pay. Correct? So that's the Gemara's question. The Gemara gets into a whole discussion there. How do we understand when a fire goes and spreads into someone else's property? How do I look at that? Is it an extension of my hand or is it my property? Take, for example, let's say somebody lights a fire and he has acres and acres of land. The fire is going, you know, burning up everything in his property. And now it takes a couple of days till it gets to the next person's property. In the interim, the person who originally lit the fire passes away. So now what? Now what, do the Yarshim have to pay? What do you say? What? Mamono, probably. And if it's Chitzo, yes, no? So this is an interesting question. So let's look at this. So the Nemuki Yosef writes in Baba Kama, not only do we take this and assume Isho Mishum Chitzo, that we assume it's an extension of my hand. When I light a fire and then the fire continues and 5 days later it burns someone else's property, we assume it's an extension of my own hand. I originally started and it's my problem. It's not like it's Maman HaMazik. It's my hand that did the Hezek in the other person's property. Says the Nemuki Yosef, we extend that to other areas of halacha as well. It's not only with regard to Nezikin that we say that. It's with regard to other areas of halacha as well. Ask the Namuki Yosef, a bomb kash. We have in everyone's homes either a man or a woman light Shabbos candles, correct? So how do you understand that? Every moment that the candle is lit, we assume it's as if an extension of my hand is still continuing to light it, to light it, to light it. So ask the Namuki Yosef. Every Friday afternoon, what do? We light a candle. And the candle continues to burn throughout a few hours into Shabbos. So it's as if I'm standing over the candle and every second I'm relighting it, relighting it, relighting it. Well, now it's 9 o'clock at night, 10 o'clock at night, 11 o'clock at night. I'm violating malacha every minute of Shabbos. So ask the Namuki Yosef, how are we allowed to do that? If we assume that this is correct, that Isha Mishim Chitzo, when I light a fire and 5 days later it goes into his property, it's as if I took a match 5 days later and lit his property on fire. Well, the same should be on Friday afternoon. If I light a candle Friday afternoon, and then ultimately it burns into Shabbos, it should be as if I'm violating Malacha on Shabbos as well. And this is the discussion that the Namuki Yosef has, and he tries to answer it, and there's a lot of halachic literature to try to explain what exactly the Namuki Yosef meant. Rav Soloveitchik suggested the simple answer to the Namuki Yosef's question is, yes, it's true. Isha Mishum Chitzo. When I light a fire, it's true, it's as if it's an extension on my hand that continues to burn the fire up, and it's as if it's continuing to light it again and again. However, the only time I could be responsible for violating Malacha Shabbos is what? If I was actively involved in that Malacha. And over here, I didn't have an active part. Yes, it's true, it's as if it's an extension of my hand, but did I stand there and actually light it? No. So because I didn't have an active part in this Malacha happening, therefore we assume that what? That cannot be considered a violation of a Malacha on Shabbos. Again, that goes back to what Rav Soloveitchik proved from that Rashi in Sanhedrin, and it goes back to what we say, lo sasa ka malacha means hagram ashari, even if something is a byproduct of what I did, but still, if I am not actively involved in that malacha, we cannot consider that to be in the category of malachas at all. So that's a very important point. My father did point out to me as well once, that Rav Soloveitchik brought another proof to this idea, which I don't know why, when my father wrote it up, he did not include this in his write-up, but it's interesting nonetheless. The Mishnah tells us in Masechah Shabbos, Baruch Ato Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam Shehakol Nuyeh B'Dvaro. Mishnah writes in Masechah Shabbos, when we talk about the Malach of Tzedah, one is not allowed to violate the Malach of Tzedah of trapping an animal on Shabbos. So the Mishnah writes, what happens if there's an animal roaming around the house? Unusual case, the Mishnah says, what if you have a deer that's roaming around the house? Okay, most of us don't have such cases, but let's say you have a dog running around the house. And now, it wasn't trapped beforehand because there were exits, there were ways to get out. Now, we close off all the exits. There happens to be one exit that's opened up in the front of the house. So, it's not called Seder yet because it can still get out. Let's say now I stand in front of the exit like this. So now, the dog can't get past me. Let's say I'm strong enough, the dog will not be able to get past me. Says the Mishnah, I'm going to be in violation of Tzedah because now I trapped the animal. I did an activity which now closes off the space that the animal can't get out. Says the Mishnah, let's say I stand like this. Now my friend comes and stands in front of me and he's also blocking the door. So, is he doing anything? I was in violation of Malach of Tzedah because I closed off the doorway. Is he in violation of Malach of Tzedah? No, why not? Because the doorway was closed before he got here. Now what happens? He's standing here, and now I walk away. So now, effectively, he's the one who's blocking the door. He didn't do anything yet, though. He stood there while I was standing there also. This is the Mishnah's case. It's not my case. The Mishnah says, I stand there first, I block off the doorway, I'm in violation of Malach of Tzedah. He comes and stands in front of me. Is he in violation of Tzedah? No, because the doorway is blocked with or without him. Now, I move away, and he's the only one blocking the door, but he didn't actively do anything. Says the Mishnah, even though he continues to stand there, and he's the only one blocking, he's not in violation of Malach of Tzedek. Why is that? Is he not the one blocking the door? The dog right now can't get out of the house. Why can the dog not get out of the house? Because he's blocking the doorway for no other reason. But, Rav Soloveitchik pointed out, what you see is, since he didn't actively do a malacha, at the time that he stepped into the doorway, there was someone else there. And even though later on it turns out the circumstances have it that later on he becomes the one who's blocking the doorway and he becomes responsible for the malacha of Tzedah, but since he didn't actively do any malacha, we assume that's not considered a malacha. That's not considered a violation of malacha of Tzedah, and therefore he would be pater on Shabbos.
That's not even a grama. That's like a... So it's not even just a one-step move, is it?
It's better or it's worse?
It's better in the sense of not being... He didn't do an act directly related. He, when he did his act,
I could have said in the other direction. I would have said in the other direction. A grumma, let's say I set up buckets of water, right? And now, 10 minutes later, the fire finally gets to the buckets of water, the buckets crack, and the fire goes out. I would have said, I removed myself from the situation 10 minutes ago. I have nothing to do with it anymore. Okay, but here, I'm still here.
But his kavana was not there when he did. Whatever action he did wasn't even related to that outcome. The only reason he is because there's an action by another party that steps away.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm saying it's not a...
Okay, it's not exactly the same, you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay, but it's interesting. My father, I asked him, I finally pressed him, and I said, why don't you write it? I thought it was a very good raya. So he said, well, he has what to question about the raya. I don't know, maybe that's his question. But again, I could have argued in either direction. Maybe it's better or maybe it's worse than a grumma. Nonetheless, we assumed basically that this is the assumption that we work with, that there's no such thing as a malacha on Shabbos. A malacha de oraisa cannot be called a malacha unless it's with an activity that I'm going to actually do. Rabbi Akiva Eiger has a suffix where he says, let's say, take ourselves back to Mesecha Sukkah. So the halacha is Sukkah Lamayla Me'asher Mama is puzzle, right? If you have a sukkah that's too high, it's puzzle. So what do? I had people come and build a sukkah for me. They didn't know the halacha. They build a sukkah 50 feet high, so it's way too high. So what are we going to do now? Now it's Yantif night. What am I supposed to do? So the Gemara says, let's say right before Yantif, you're going to go and throw a mound of dirt in, and now it's going to make the, what do you call it, the halal, what do you call that, the space in between the schach and the bottom and the floor of the sukkah, it's going to make it a lot less. So now it's going to be less than Asher Mama. Says the Gemara, what happens if I fill up the sukkah with a bunch of dirt, but I forgot to be mevatel it? This is my fancy dirt that I'm going to use to grow all the plants in the backyard. So otherwise I never would have used it for the sukkah, but now I have a problem. It's Erev Yantav, I have nothing else to do. I have no other dirt in hand, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to stuff it up with all the fancy dirt that I really was going to use to plant my plants. The problem is you have to be mevatel the offer. You have to say, I really want to consider this like now that it is the floor of the sukkah. Says the Gemara, what do I do? Here I am, Yantav. I'm about to sit in my sukkah and I realize I wasn't mevatel the dirt to the ground. So what should I do now? So Rabbi Akiva Eiger has a suffix, are you allowed to be mevatel the dirt to the ground on Shabbos or not? On Shabbos and Yantif. What's the malacha?
Building a sukkah.
Am I really building a sukkah?
No,
oh, right. So to go and bang the nails in, that would be a malacha. But I'm not really banging the nails in. What am I doing? Everything that I did was done before Yantif. Now the only thing I forgot to do was to be mevatel it to the ground of the sukkah. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger has the suffix. Well, on the one hand, you really are building a sukkah because without that, your sukkah is going to be puzzle. On the other hand, I'm not doing anything. Rabbi Akiva Eiger in the end comes to the conclusion that he quotes a Rabbeinu Manoach, and he says, the Rabbeinu Manoach says, since all I need is machshava to accomplish my goal, I don't have to do any maisa. He says he can't call that a malacha. It's the same idea. You can't call something a malacha if it's just done ayidei machshava or ayidei dibur, if I speak and then a malacha comes about. Or if I think about something and a malacha comes about, that is not going to be considered or classified, categorized as a malacha. You can't be. It's only if you do an active participation in the malacha that we consider it a malacha. Otherwise, you can't.
Why would that machshava be implicit when you move the dirt?
It's not always... The Gemara assumes you have to be mevatel. The Gemara assumes that way, that's for sure. That you have to be mevatel the offer. So again, if it's offer that anybody would just throw around, so then obviously once you put it in, it's obvious.
It's really not really this true. I mean, why? I don't understand the point. Because what you're thinking, something you specifically designate for something, and you're changing its designation for what you're doing. That sounds like very strong right already.
You're saying by putting it in.
Okay.
So that's a question when we talk about sukkah. But over here, Akiva Eiger, I thought the suffix really brings out the point very well. There's another interesting discussion that the Achronim have. Let's say in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, whenever they had major problems, they used to go and ask the Urim V'Tumim and Mishayla. So how did it work? The Gemara has a machlokas Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. What used to happen when they asked the Urim V'Tumim and Mishayla? Urim V'Tumim used to answer? Did it talk back to them? No. So the Gemara tells us that the Urim V'Tumim used to respond by the letters that were on the Urim V'Tumim. So the Gemara has a discussion, what used to happen? Perhaps the letters used to stick out. Maybe that's what used to happen. Or the Gemara says, maybe osios mistarfos. Maybe there was an absolute miracle. A half a miracle would have been if the letters stick out. A tremendous miracle would have been if the letters now formulate to come into one word, and now it says mutter, usser, something like that. That would be an unbelievable miracle. So the Gemara has this discussion, Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. So let's say you assume, says the Gemara, that osios mistarfos. When I ask the Urim V'Tumim Mishayla, should I give a shir tonight? Urim V'Tumim says, yes. And now what happens? All the letters come together and say yes. They say Kain, Chaf Nun, let's say, right? So now, some Acharonim ask the question, what happens if I have this question on Friday night? I go to the Urim V'Tumim and I'm stuck and I don't know what to do. Should I give a shiur tonight or not? I approach the Urim V'Tumim and I ask, do you think I should give a shiur tonight? The Urim V'Tumim says, yes, it's a wonderful thing to do. And what happens? All of a sudden, the letters start coming together. Am I allowed to ask the Urim V'Tumim Mishayla on Yantif, on Shabbos? Isn't that Malach of Ksiva? What? So some Acharonim say, well, we find that they did ask on Yantiv, they find they did ask on Shabbos, okay, whatever it is. But if we assume that the Urim V'Tumim is something that's accessible on Shabbos and Yantiv, how are you allowed to do that? Shouldn't we assume it's a malacha? The answer is that what? My father, when I discussed this with him once, he said, how can you even get the question off the ground? There's no question. How does the malacha happen? How does the malacha happen? It happens because you speak to it, it happens because you're thinking about a question, and all of a sudden words start popping out and coming up. That's not called a malacha. You can't call it a malacha. A malacha is only when I have active participation. Over here, we don't consider that to be active participation. There is one exception, even though we assume this is the general rule, that a malacha cannot be considered a malacha unless you have an active participation. There is one exception to the rule, and that is the Gemara Bava Kama Daf Samach, when it describes the malacha of Zoreya. The malacha of Zoreya is when I throw up the grain into the air, and then the wind comes along and it blows away the part that I don't want, and it leaves behind the part that I do want. So what happens when I throw it up? Am I doing a malacha? Not really. Nothing happens. If I throw it up when there's no wind outside, nothing happens. You might violate the Isra of Muktzah, whatever, but that's the Rabbanan. When you talk about a malacha, if I just throw it up and it's not a windy day, nothing's going to happen, and it's going to come right back down and I'll be fine. What happens is when I throw it up, all of a sudden the wind comes along and does something else. Well, what does that have to do with me? I'm not actively involved once it gets up to that part of the malacha. So how can you say that that's considered one of the lamatas malachas? What am I doing? I don't have an active participation. The answer is, that's the one exception to the rule the Gemara says, malachas machsheves asra Torah. Yes, it might be true that you always need to be actively engaged and involved in a malacha in order to categorize it as a malacha. However, when it comes to the malacha of Zoreya, the whole nature, the normal way for a person to violate, to perform, I should say, that malacha of Zoreya is by throwing it up in the wind, and then the wind comes. That's the way we normally do it. Melechesh machsheves asra Torah means, even though it's an exception to the rule, even though we should say this should not be classified as a malacha because I'm not actively involved, yet, since this is the natural, normal way to violate or to perform that kind of activity, we assume that you would be in violation of a malacha just by throwing it up in the air, even though you're not actively involved once the wind comes and blows away the part that you no longer need. So that's a very interesting thing to keep in mind. This makes a major, major nafkamina lahalacha, and that goes as follows. There's something nowadays called, I'm going to read a little bit because I don't know too much about it. I did some research. It's called brain-computer interface. Anyone familiar with this? BCI. So BCI is a fascinating technology. You should look it up later. It's really interesting. Why is it? What it is basically is a direct communication pathway between your brain and an external device. What does that mean? I'll read. By placing electrodes, I don't even know how to say it, either on the scalp or on the gray matter of the brain itself, which is incredible that they can do this, scientists are now able to detect signals and interpret what function or movement they were destined to generate, just by your thoughts. So they put something onto your head, and now they can understand, they could read the reactions that your brain is giving off. Thus, when I think or intend on clenching my fist, this doesn't just happen naturally. When I clench my fist, my brain has to send a reaction that wants my fist to do that. So now, if they attach something to my brain and take that reaction, scientists can now direct that electrical energy to an external device. Normally, when my brain gives that reaction, my hand goes like this. But what if they took that reaction? What if I didn't have a hand, take for example? What if somebody didn't have a hand, and now they figured out how to give me a prosthetic hand, and they connected my brain reactions to my prosthetic hand, that every time my brain feels that it should clench a fist, it would now do that. That's what scientists have now figured out how to do. It's called BCI technology. It's an incredible breakthrough in science. BCI now allows scientists to create a makeshift nervous system, rerouting the brain signals generated when one wishes to move his body, and sending them either to the limbs that his brain was previously unable to communicate with, or to an external device such as a prosthetic limb. Games for children are already on the market where one wears a type of electrode cap and plays the game merely by concentrating on that which he or she wishes to accomplish. Amazing. Wish I had this when I was a kid. A mind-controlled car has already been invented and tested, and the scientists are currently developing this technology, and they say within 20 to 30 years, people will be able to implant a chip into their brains that gives them a full control over many of the electronic appliances and more with their thoughts alone. Okay, so I'm going to be able to be standing over here. I'm going to think about the fact that I want the lights on in my house, and all of a sudden they're going to go on. It's amazing. It's just incredible when you think about the scientific breakthrough. And now, this opens up all sorts of very serious shailas when it comes to melacha on Shabbos. So when we're talking about my prosthetic arm, that's not really part of the shaila. But what about when I walk into a house and I say, hey, it's hot in here, or I don't even say it, I just think, hey, it's hot in here, and all of a sudden the electricity starts going and the air conditioner gets raised and the heat gets lowered and all sorts of things starts happening. And after I eat on Friday night, I load up my dishwasher and I start thinking, you know, this should really turn on, and the dishwasher starts to go. Is that going to be considered a melacha or not? Now that is a major, major shaila. What? So is Dibur any different? That's an interesting question. Is Dibur any different? Let's say when you talk to the Urim V'Tumim, that's part of the question that they discuss over there. Maybe Dibur is different. But let's say, forget Dibur. Let's say BCI technology allows you just to think without saying anything. So Dibur, the Gemara says there are a few exceptions where we assume, but Dibur is Abed Maisa. There are a few places where we say Dibur is considered a real serious consequence because you're really performing an activity just by your words alone. Generally, we assume that Dibur alone is not enough to say it's considered a Maisa. So let's leave Dibur out for now. BCI technology allows you just to think about something, and all of a sudden a reaction is going to happen with the technology. It's unbelievable. So when you think about Hilchos Shabbos, this is something that's discussed nowadays. There are some poskim that discuss it. If I'm not mistaken, the same Rabbi Chiel, Rabbi Halpern, who we quoted last week, the same Rabbi Halpern wrote, I think, about this also. He's very up on technology and issues on Shabbos and all these kinds of things. He wrote about this as well, and this is a major question that comes up nowadays. When I discussed it with my father 2 years ago, he said the question doesn't get off the ground. Because how can you say that's a malacha? Just by thinking about something, the same way Rabbi Kivager says, when you're mevatel the ufer and your sukkah on Shabbos or Yom Tov, that's not considered a malacha. He quotes Rabbeinu Manoach. Why? Because you can't violate a malacha without doing a maisa. The same way Rashi says you can't be chayiv skila on Shabbos unless you actively are involved in a malacha. Well, similarly over here, we'll assume, even though by thinking about something, your heat is going to be turned on, your air conditioner is going to be turned on, your garage is going to open, something's going to happen, even though a malacha might happen because of what you're thinking, that's not considered to be your malacha. Why? Because you are not actively engaged in the malacha itself that's happening. Now, you might have other problems with a dishwasher running on Shabbos or a washing machine happening on Shabbos because Avsha Milsa, Marasai, and all sorts of things, people are going to think you're doing a malacha. But leaving all those considerations aside, let's say turning the heat up, turning the air conditioner on, I don't know that there's such a Marasai involved in that. I don't know, does everybody realize when it's 1 degree higher, 1 degree lower? I'm not sure. So if you think about, I want my house to be 65 degrees, 70 degrees, and now all of a sudden it changes, I'm not sure that that would be a problem. So this is all very relevant. You think that it's not relevant when we talk about a malacha being violated with a maisa or not, it's actually extremely relevant to the technology that we have nowadays. Now we move a little bit further to talk about another issue. We have, yes, it's true when it comes to a malacha, we assume you can only violate a malacha when you have an active participation. What about when we talk about gzeiros on Shabbos? There are two types of isurim on Shabbos. Some are isurim d'araisa, some are isurim d'rabbanan. Isurim d'araisa, like malachas, we assume you have to have active participation. What about a gzeiros d'rabbanan? For example, the Gemara says there's an Isra of Shehiyah on Shabbos. What does it mean, Shehiyah on Shabbos? You're not allowed to leave something on the fire on Erev Shabbos, going into Shabbos itself. Why not? Why not? What am I doing wrong? I'm not actively involved in that, correct? What am I doing? I left it on the fire Erev Shabbos, and now it's staying on the fire. What you see is that when it comes to Gzeira, over there, by leaving something on the fire, they were concerned, maybe you're going to fiddle around, maybe you're going to switch the flame, maybe you're going to make it higher, lower. What you see is when there's a gzeira midirabanan, there is that possibility of having a gzeira being violated even b'sheva altasa, even when I have no active participation at all. For example, shehiyah. I leave a pot on the fire, I don't do anything to it, and still I can violate the gzeira b'shabbos just by the mere fact that I left it there. Why? Because we're concerned maybe you're going to switch the flame to make it higher or lower. Similarly, we have a gemara in Erev and Daf Kuf. The gemara says, we have a gzeira midirabanan on Shabbos, ein olam b'ilan. You're not allowed to go up on a tree on Shabbos. Why not? Because maybe you're going to break off a branch of a tree, and that will be a malacha. So we make a gzeira midrabanan. Says the Gemara, what happens if a person goes up onto the tree on Erev Shabbos and stays there the whole Shabbos? So I didn't do anything. I didn't move around. I have food up there. I'm on my treehouse. I have everything. I don't do anything on Shabbos. more than when I was on Erev Shabbos. The Gemara says you're in violation of the Gzeira Midrabanan of Ein Olam B'Ilam B'Shabbos. Why? I didn't do anything. I stayed stationary the whole Shabbos. Yet, what you see clearly from the Gemara, both by Shehiya and over here by Ein Olam B'Ilam, is that in contrary to a malacha, which can only be violated actively, when it comes to Gzeira Midrabanan, you can violate it even passively, even b'sheva atase, when I have no involvement at all. I went up onto the tree Erev Shabbos and I stayed there. You're violating a gzeira midrabanan of ein olam b'ilam b'shabbos. I left my pot on the fire Erev Shabbos and I don't do anything to it once Shabbos comes in. You're in violation of the gzeira midrabanan of shehiya b'shabbos. My father goes so far as to say, you look at number bays. It's in the same piece that he has the first paragraph that we read. It's going to scare some people off, so maybe you'll read it on your own. It's going to be a big problem. He comes out being machmer against alarm clocks, so let's leave that for now. But you can read it on your own. The basic understanding is that we assume that when it comes to... Yeah, it's too late. I said it already. But in the end, he told me once that he wrote it, but he said, I don't understand. Obviously, there's something wrong because nobody in the world agrees with me. So he said, my logic is obviously flawed in some way. Okay, so let's hope that that's correct. So the question is, yes, now that we know that that's true, really for the sake of time, that's why I'm skipping it, but you should read it later. It's an interesting paragraph. What you see is what emerges from all of this is that even though by Malacha we assume you have to have active participation, by Exeira Midrabanan you can violate even if you are b'sheva al tasa. So now let's take it a little bit further. Rabbi Kiva Eger has a suffix in one of his tshuvas. He was asked a shaila by his brother Rabunim Eger, Rabbi Simcha Bunim Eger, and the question was, we have Gzeira Midrabanan of Mekachu Memkar on Shabbos. You're not allowed to do business transactions on Shabbos. Why is that? The Gemara says in Beitza, because it's a Gzeira Shema Yichtov. We're concerned, well, normally when I do business transactions, I like to have it recorded, I like to write it down, so we're concerned if you're going to do any sort of transaction on Shabbos, maybe you're going to write it down, Gzeira Shema Yichtov. That's what the Gemara says. So Rabbi Kiva Eger's brother sent him the following shaila. Am I allowed to do a business transaction on Friday and stipulate that the transaction should only come into effect on Shabbos? So on Shabbos proper, I don't actually do anything. It happens by itself. Take, for example, what we're all familiar with. You have an eBay or an Amazon bidding. And you bid, and the bid happens to be over on a Shabbos. So now, your transaction, you already put all the credit card information in 5 days ago. The bid is going to be over on Shabbos. Now that's when everything's going to come into effect. Am I allowed to be involved in such a transaction on Shabbos? So you'll say, well, there's no real Gzeira Shema Yichtov. What am I going to write down now? It happens automatically. I can't pull out now. So that's the discussion that Rabbi Kiva Eger has. Now that we know that a Gzeira Midrabanan you could violate even B'Shal Tasa, even passively, which is not like a Malacha on Shabbos, what about when it comes to Mekach U'Memkar? Do we assume that Mekach U'Memkar can be violated even b'sheva al tasa? Or do you have to have an active participation in the Mekach U'Memkar in order to violate that Gzeira Midrabanan on Shabbos? Now this was also discussed in the Sholem Eshev. The Sholem Eshev, one of the great Gedolim in Europe, had a discussion. What do we do? Erev Pesach Shecholias b'Shabbos is always a major problem. Erev Pesach Shecholias b'Shabbos, we don't want to give away all of our chametz before Shabbos because we don't want to have... What are we going to eat? You're not allowed to eat matzah, Erev Pesach. It's always a problem. So what do? Erev Pesach, Shechalias B'Shabbos asked the Sholem Eshev, maybe you should do the following. We're all going to sell our chametz to the goy. So you know what? Why don't we make a kinyan with a non-Jew on Erev Shabbos and tell him we only want the kinyan to go into effect at 11 o'clock on Shabbos morning. We're all going to daven at 6 o'clock in the morning, Shabbos morning. We'll come home at 10 o'clock, have our chametz, have our chalent, have our challah, have everything. And now after the meal is over at 11, all of a sudden, our chametz is going to be sold to the guy on its own. Is that something I'm allowed to do? Can I set up such a system that I sell it on Friday, that the whole kinyan should go into effect on Shabbos itself? You have a question?
Isn't that different, though, than the eBay deal? Because you don't know what's going to happen with your eBay deal.
Why not?
You don't know if you're
going to
win it.
Are you saying it could be there's someone else?
Yeah.
So let's say, forget about the eBay deal. Let's say I sign up for something, and it always gives me... one day to back out from a transaction, right? Let's say. I think there are such things. Airline tickets, right? I don't know. Give another example. Maybe eBay, Amazon wasn't such a good example. Or let's flip the case, the eBay case. Let's say I'm the seller. And I set it that the bidding should be over on a Shabbos?
Yeah,
right?
It's not more property.
Yeah.
With a different time zone, with the time zone that you're in.
Right. So this is all part of this question. So it's a very, very important and relevant question. And we bring ourselves to, Rabbi Kiva Eger points us, we never would have found it on our own, but Rabbi Kiva Eger points us to a Chumas Hadeshen. And that is, we assume if a Pidun HaBen, if Yom Lamed Aleph, when you have to do a Pidun HaBen, so you have to do a transaction with the Kohen, you have to give him money, he doesn't really give you back your child, but there's some transaction that goes on there. So the question is, what happens if Yom Lamed Aleph falls out on Shabbos? So what are you supposed to do? Shulchan Aruch paskins from the Rivash very clearly, you are not allowed to perform a Pidun HaBen on Shabbos because that's the Gzeirah of Mecha Chamemkar. You are now making a transaction between two parties, yourself and the Kohen, and that's part of the Gzeirah Durabanan of Mecha Chamemkar B'Shabbos, is Gzeirah Shem Yichtov. Asked the Chumas Hadeshen, can you make all of the arrangements on Friday with the Kohen? You'll give him the money, you'll talk to him, you'll tell him everything, and you'll say, tomorrow's the Yom Lamed Aleph, I want that the transaction should go into effect tomorrow on Shabbos, because tomorrow is actually the day, the Yom Lamed Aleph, when we're supposed to perform the Pidun HaBen. So can I set up the whole system, asked the Chumas Hadeshen, can I set up everything on Friday that it should go into effect on Shabbos? Or do we say no? When it comes to Gzeirah Midrabanan, you could violate it even B'Sheva Al Taseh, and therefore you have to be very careful about doing such a thing. Because if you're going to do it, even a passive involvement is also considered a violation of the Gzeirah of Mekach HaMemkar on Shabbos. Says the Chumas Hadeshen, we don't have time to read it now because we're running out of time already. Says the Chumas Hadeshen, if you read it on your own, Rabbi Kiva Eger writes, the Chumas Hadeshen is only concerned about, oh, how can you do such a thing? Because then you're going to lose out on the bracha. There's a bracha that you make up in HaBen. So if you set up the system on Friday, you can't make the bracha on Friday because you're not doing the mitzvah. Can't make the bracha on Shabbos because you're not actively doing anything. You have to make a bracha when you do a Maisa HaMitzvah. So now I'm not doing a Maisa HaMitzvah on Shabbos, I'm not doing the Maisa HaMitzvah on Friday. Chumas Hadeshen says, not a good idea because then you're going to lose out the bracha. But other than that, says Rabbi Kiva Eger, what you see is, what emerges is it would work. How could it work? What do you mean? Aren't you in violation of Mecha Chumemkar? What you see is, says Rabbi Kiva Eger from the Chumas Hadeshen, that there would be no issue of Mecha Chumemkar. And even though by Shehi on Shabbos we assume you can violate even B'Shev Al Taseh, by Ein Olam Be'ilon you can violate even B'Shev Al Taseh, when it comes to Mecha Chumemkar on Shabbos, you do not violate unless you are actively involved. I assume the reason is, one second, I assume the reason is because the Gzeirah, the concern here is Shema Yichtov. Maybe you're going to write, if I'm not involved in the transaction, there's nothing to write down. I assume that's why. Meaning you're saying, how did Chazal figure out what the Hagdar is? When do you say that Sheva Tasa you could violate? When do you say Sheva Tasa you don't? It's an interesting question. Now, Rabbi Kiva Eger in the end of the Tshuva comes out, not like the Chumas Hadeshen. Kiva Eger in the end is Machmir. Rabbi Kiva Eger quotes that the Yerushalmi writes in the beginning of Maseches Yuma, we know that on the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur has to be married. V'chiper ba'ado v'ad beso means the Kohen Gadol has to be married. So the Gemara is going into a whole discussion, what are you going to do if the Kohen Gadol's wife dies on Yom Kippur night? Yom Kippur morning, he has to do the avoda, what's he going to do? Says the Yerushalmi, maybe we should say he should marry a woman on Erev Yom Kippur and do it all up tonight. If my wife happens to unfortunately pass away on Yom Kippur night, then I want the Kiddushin to be chal on Yom Kippur morning, and this way I'll be able to save myself from v'chiper ba'ado v'ad beso. I'll be able to be married and perform the avodah. So the Gemara goes into a whole discussion about whether or not that should be permissible. And basically Rabbi Kiva Eger says, from the fact that the Yerushalmi says that really we would not allow such a thing, meaning the only reason the Kohen Gadol would be allowed to do that is because Ein Shavuz B'Migdash, because Gzeiros D'Rabbanan don't apply in the Beis HaMikdash, but forgetting that factor, one would not be allowed to do that, even though, what malach am I doing on Shabbos? What malach am I doing on Yontif? I set up the system on Friday, I gave her the ring, I did everything, and I said, if something goes wrong, then the Kiddushin should be chal on its own. Says Rabbi Kiva Eger, what you see from that Yerushalmi is that you would be in violation of Mecha Chumemkar on Shabbos, even B'Shev Al Taseh. Later, Achronim don't like what he says. In the end of the day, Rav Moshe Feinstein writes, I forgot to put it on here, but Rav Moshe writes in the end, Nimsa, I'll read you his lesson. Nimsa, she'ein raya lo le'isr v'lo le'heter. Moshe says, we don't have a proof whether it's mutter or whether it's aser because we have so many opinions. Yesh la'achmer misafek u'befrat shekvar hora hazakin Rabbi Kiva Eger le'isr ad she'ivur yosab ezus Hashem yisbarach. Moshe writes, you have to be machmer because we're not sure. Because we have, on the one hand, the sources of Chumas Hadeshen, we have others who say there's no problem. On the other hand, we have Rabbi Kiva Eger who comes to the conclusion that he's not so convinced. My father told me otherwise. My father felt that Rav Moshe here was being machmir a little too far, and he felt that the argument was very compelling to assume that there's no issue of Mecha Chumemkar when it comes to Shabbos when it's B'Shev Al Taseh. Again, because the whole consideration of Mecha Chumemkar is Gzeirah Shemayichtav. If I'm not actively involved in the transaction, there's no factor of maybe I'll write something. There's nothing to write down. You're not involved. Everything that you did happened on Friday. And my father was of that opinion. I did see this morning that the Torah's Chesed, which is a tshuva sefer that my father happens to love very, very much for other things that he wrote, but I was going to show it to him. He happens to be in Eretz Yisrael, so I didn't have a chance. But the Torah's Chesed has a whole tshuva where he argues against Rabbi Akiva Eiger, and he argues with very clear proofs that Rabbi Akiva Eiger is not correct. Maybe that's why my father felt that Rabbi Akiva Eiger here was being machmer shelo kedin. But because of that, my father's of the opinion that when it comes to the gzeira of Mekach HaMemkar b'Shabbos, again, if I had an Amazon bidding, and I know that the bidding is over on a Shabbos, I would be allowed to do that. Let's say the discussion was raised, the Marshag, who was one of the great gedolim in the beginning of the 1900s, so he wrote a famous tshuva about somebody who owned vending machines in the middle of Yerushalayim. So do I have to shut them down? Do I have to turn off the electricity on Shabbos to make sure that nobody's going to go and buy my stuff on Shabbos? Or do you say, no, I have no active participation, even if a Jew comes along? So maybe there's an issue of Lifnei Iver, considerations of that. But let's say, assuming all of my purchasers are non-Jews, or Lifnei Iver doesn't apply for whatever reason, is there a simple problem of Mekach HaMemker? I'm charging somebody for the cookies, charging somebody for the ice cream, and now they're putting in money, I'm making a transaction with them, but there's no consideration of Gzeirah Shemayichta. What am I going to write down? I'm not there, I'm not standing there taking a ledger of all the transactions that took place. There's nothing to be concerned about. And that's why that would fall under the same category of Mekach HaMemkar being permissible on Shabbos, because we assume that Mekach HaMemkar perhaps would not be violated when we talk about B'sheva Atasa, when I'm not actively involved. So let's just review before Mariv, and that is, when it comes to a Malacha, we prove from Rashi and Sanhedrin that Malacha can only be violated on Shabbos when you are actively engaged in a Malacha. If you are not actively engaged in a Malacha, you cannot violate. That's what we prove from Rashi Maseches Sanhedrin. That's when you prove, to answer the question of the Nimuki Yosef, how am I ever allowed to light Shabbos candles on Friday? Why am I not concerned that it's as if I'm standing there every moment and relighting my candles again? That's our Rav Soloveitchik proof from the Malacha of Tzedah, that we assume if you stand in a place and then the other person walks away from the door, and you effectively are now blocking up the door, violating the Malacha of Tzedah, still, Mishnah says that would be permissible and you would not be in violation of Malacha of Tzedah. We then spoke about what about when you come to Xeris, and we proved from Shehiyah and from Ein Olam Be'ilam, the Gemara in Erev and Daf Kuf, that in fact you could be in violation of Xeris even B'Sheva Altasa, but that doesn't extend to all Xeris. When it comes to the Xeris of Mekach HaMemkar, which was instituted because we're concerned, Xeris Shema Yichtov, maybe he'll come to write something, so then we assume that maybe, that's what Rabbi Akiva Eiger has the discussion, that's what we have the interesting talk about whether or not you can violate the Xeris Mekach HaMemkar B'Sheva Altasa or not. Mitzvah Shem will continue.